Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WJLA 7 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Cybersecurity. Is that something you know very much about? Is it something you think about? Well, you should. We're going to talk about some of the various areas where we're vulnerable. For small businesses, for personal use, for our home office, and particularly with so many people working from home these days, brings up all kinds of interesting questions. And we're going to direct those questions to my guest today, Kelvin Coleman. He's the executive director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance. Kelvin, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Shirley, great to be with you today.
Thank you. Now, you all have an interesting organization. You're doing a lot of stuff in a lot of different areas. And before we went on the air, you were talking about a push that you're doing to get recognition for a project that you're particularly concerned about. You want to give us a little update on that?
Yeah, thank you very much, Shirley. You know, the National Cybersecurity Alliance, we are the model public-private partnership convener, right? And what does that mean? I mean, we bring together private sector, specifically 30 companies on our board that represents about $7.3 trillion, that's what a T, trillion dollars of market cap in the world. And also we work very closely with government. For years now, Shirley, we've been talking about cybersecurity, and you have certainly been a great, you know, supporter in that area. But we haven't had a sort of rallying symbol, right? Literally a symbol, a logo that we can look at and say, ah, that's cybersecurity. So working this year with our board and with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, we created a very nice blue shield that now represents cybersecurity and particularly Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And your listeners, yeah, can't see it, but I'd love to get it to you, and maybe we can tweet it out so everyone can start to rally around that symbol as we think about cybersecurity.
Okay, now where is this symbol going to be appearing? Is it going to be where? I mean, how do you... how does this become something that I recognize, and what, how would I use it?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. And we're actually building a plane as we fly it type thing. In other words, we came up with this great symbol before Cybersecurity Awareness Month in October. And then we put out guidance to our member companies, right? The 30 companies that are on our board, and here's how you use this symbol, and here's where we would use it at. If you're using a cybersecurity awareness program, it's a great opportunity to put it there. During Cybersecurity Awareness Month, we branded all of our material with it on our social media platforms. So we're actually developing the user protocol now, and that should be out, I would say, early February for everyone to then be able to know exactly how to use it, when and where.
So we're just giving people a heads up that this is going to be coming down the road. It's something that will be useful to consumers, and telling them that companies are subscribing to the theories behind the blue shield, and that is to get offering protection to consumers for against being raided online, if you want to use the word. As a matter of fact, Kelvin, there was an interesting thing happened this morning. I got a call from our credit card company, and this is a little bit different issue, but I got a call from our credit card company, and they were questioning some charges on our credit card. And sure enough, we go to the website of the credit card company, and there are these charges that don't belong to us. Matter of fact, some smart soul was using our credit card to buy tickets to the Delaware lottery. And they spent several hundred dollars three times on lottery tickets. Now, my question to them is, if it wins, do I get a share? You know? What's so scary about that, Kelvin, is that this happens so easily and you don't even know it. And thank goodness the credit card company and the bank, particularly the bank, was on top of this and called us to let us know so we get back to them and, you know, we get the charges removed. But this is just an insidious little tip of the iceberg kind of thing that's really going on, isn't it?
You're absolutely right, Shirley. And think about a small business. that has to go through that. And, you know, buying a couple hundred dollars worth of lottery tickets is obviously a big headache for you. And I get it. And think about a couple of hundred thousand dollars, even into the millions that happens with small and medium sized businesses, because perhaps they were taken advantage of, or some bad actor was able to exploit a vulnerability with that community, which is why at the National Cybersecurity Alliance, we have an entire portfolio dedicated to small and medium-sized businesses, Shirley. We call it our Cybersecure My Business program. And of course, we believe in being force multipliers at the National Cybersecurity Alliance. We're not the biggest organization in the world, but we have some great relationships with, like I said, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, the Small mm-hmm. Business Administration, Department of Commerce, and other folks, where we talk to small and medium-sized businesses on how they can help mitigate and certainly manage that risk. So while I certainly, you know, feel bad that you had to go through that, I also think about those small and medium-sized businesses who are losing entire payrolls because of this issue.
Yeah, because they can be, and right now particularly, I think so many of our small businesses are just teetering on the edge. And unfortunately, a number of them have gone out of business just because they don't have any business with the lockdown that we've been experiencing for the last, it seems like the last 6 years, but the last 9 months. And anyway, I saw your program, and that looked very interesting to me, because Call for Action has really been on the forefront of identifying frauds that target small businesses. We've done a lot of education, and we often refer to the small businesses as our forgotten consumers. So we have a lot of interest in that, and I was very interested in what I saw in your program. So tell me how you would advise people to go about protecting themselves. Let's talk about the individual right now. How do they protect themselves? I mean, we have such an influx of devices coming into our homes, everything from doorbells to smart refrigerators to controls over our house, our lighting, our electricity, everything that goes on. They're called smart homes, or the Internet of Things, I think the phrase is right now. But the issue to me is, how do you make sure that all of this exposure, which is going out over the internet, it's not some crook sitting out there saying, oh, goody, I look what Shirley's doing today. We're going to take advantage of that. So anyway, it just kind of boggles my mind what is happening in terms of our exposure. Now, before you give me that answer, I'm going to give us a small break. Because okay. I know that's a big answer, Kelvin. I really want to hear your thoughts on how we go about doing this. Let me just tell our listeners, they are tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest today is Kelvin Coleman. He's the Executive Director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance. And I believe your website is what? Stay Safe Online, Kelvin?
That's exactly right, Shirley. StaySafeOnline.org.
Yep, you're a nonprofit. You're out there doing good work. Okay, go back to my question about how do you protect yourself?
Keep it simple. I'm a country boy from Blair, South Carolina. And I tell you what, I grew up knowing that the best effectiveness is probably efficiency. And by that, what I mean is that, there are some extraordinarily complex and high-tech ways and methodologies that bad actors are taking advantage of, like password spraying or brute force login attempts. But we can actually deter a lot of this by rather low-tech countermeasures, Shirley, like ensuring that entities keep sensitive material password protected. And so that's off the bat one thing you could do right away, right? Make sure that folks are using robust and unique passwords. Passwords are still very effective and the low-hanging fruit answer to these things. So we'd still remind people that passwords are very, very effective. Another thing they could do, Shirley, is make sure that they are taking advantage of multi-factor authentication. If passwords, you look at it like a secure door, if the password is the lock on the actual door, think about multi-factor authentication as the deadbolt, right? It just makes it that much more
challenging. Just another step, sure.
Yeah, it's another step, but another very useful step because it causes the bad actors to have to go through, you know, another step in their efforts to get to you. And bad actors like you know, all of them, right? They yes. want high reward, low risk, and they don't want to put a lot of energy into that. And so if you have a robust password, if you have a multi-factor authentication, and very lastly, Shirley, I would say, update your devices, right? It's amazing how vulnerable an unpatched device is. If you just do those three things, keep your devices patched with the latest security protocols, make sure you're using multi-factor authentication where you can, and using a robust password, we could easily decrease the number of successful attacks that we see out there by those three simple things.
You know, I read something in the paper this morning that was talking about the vulnerabilities and how easy it is for hackers to get in. And I think perhaps they were particularly referring to apps that use open source code in developing, and everybody knows what that code is, and it makes it more vulnerable to hackers. Is that something you all address at all?
Not specifically open source, because I think our advice, particularly what I just shared with you, right? The advice I share for you, your question was about individuals, and probably so. And when we talk about small and medium-sized businesses, guess what, Shirley? My advice is going to be the same in terms of the top three things small and medium-sized businesses can do. When we talk about large corporations, right? They are enacting the same countermeasures against the bad actors to make sure that they're not vulnerable to these attacks. And so these low-tech methods that we're talking about, again, are super effective against attacks. If you think about this for a moment, Shirley, you mentioned the Internet of Things a moment ago. Well, we're quickly moving into what's called the Internet of Everything, right? You know, everything is going to be connected in some way or another. And if you only look at the numbers, in 2015, we had about 15 billion connected devices. Around the world. Well, in 2020, 5 years later, today, Shirley, we have about 20 billion connected devices. Now, my South Carolina math tells me that's about a 25% increase. But guess what, Shirley? In the next 5 years, in the same time period from 5 years ago to now, the next 5 years in 2025, we're going to have an estimated 60 billion connected devices. And what that is a 300% increase from today. Wow. To 5 years from now. Now, 5 years ago to now, a 25% increase. From now to 5 years in the future, a 300% increase, Shirley. That means we are going to be in the age of the Internet of Everything. How do we, you know, really manage that risk? Keep it simple. Make sure that we're, again, using those robust passwords and patching and making sure that we are absolutely using multi-factor authentication. Until something better comes along to help us secure ourselves, Shirley, those are the things that I advise Fortune 500, small mom and pop shops, as well as the individual.
And also to make sure that you're using your devices the most effectively. I mean, I'm one of these people that turns off everything. I don't let anybody know where I am unless I have a reason for it.
That's right.
I mean, I've been using devices, and I used to be a computer programmer back in some years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm not scared of the devices. I'm scared of what people do to use them against me. That's the thing that I'm concerned with. And of course, at Call for Action, that's what we hear about, mm-hmm. are people who are vulnerable in more ways than one. But now you're addressing a lot of the issues, and you talk about on your website some of the areas that people need to be concerned about. One of the other things that you mentioned that I was particularly interested in is making sure that parents set up parental controls on these devices that is appropriate for the age of their child. I'm happen to be on the TV monitoring board, and that's something we just got through doing, looking at ratings on TV programs. And of course, it goes much farther than that in terms of the devices and what kind of websites they can access. So are there some really fine tuning that parents need to do to make sure that their kids are not visiting porn sites, for example?
Yeah, it falls in the keep it simple category, just as parents for generations have been talking to their kids about looking both ways before they cross the street, or stranger danger, or, you know, making sure you sift through the Halloween candy that you get to make sure you're not just eating anything from anyone. You know, as parents, we're used to, you know, making sure our kids are staying safe and putting them in the best possible position to be secure. It should be that much more rigorous when it comes to technology, because as you know, the kids of today, the teenagers, the preteens, they're digital natives. They don't know a world.
Yeah, they're smarter than I am. That's for sure.
That's right. They don't know a world without being connected. In fact, I will tell you this funny story, and this is absolute truth. You know, pre-COVID, we were visiting my parents, and my 11-year-old saw what my mom had, used to be a house phone, and happened to be the one you put on the dresser and with the dials, and that wasn't working, but she kept it there for nostalgia's sake. And I said to my daughter, hey, this is a phone, dial my number. She could not, she literally looked at it and had no idea what to do with it. Right?
Oh, gosh.
And so think about just a few years ago, that was probably the norm in a house. Now,
that's
very few people have what we call house phones, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is astonishing. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Kelvin Coleman. He's the Executive Director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance. And we're talking about the various ways that we are vulnerable to hacking, to having our personal information stolen. And I think the best advice that Kevin has given us, and it makes a lot of sense, is keep it simple. Utilize the simple tools to protect yourself, like passwords, strong ones, and other layers of protection that are available. It really is interesting for me, having been involved in the computer world for many years, to see what has evolved out of all of this, and to realize that sometimes the crooks are really steps ahead of us. But if you were telling consumers, now we've given them the advice of keeping it simple, the passwords and so on, what about the equipment itself? Are there things that you should be looking for in your equipment? Probably not. Probably just buying something that's new and making sure you've got the right programs on it. Would that be the best thing? We've got a holiday gift season coming up. Is there any particular advice on that score?
I think your premise is correct, Shirley, in that the products are generally pretty sound these days, right? And many of the products that we're able to buy as it relates to technology gives you the opportunity to manipulate security settings, privacy settings. And the first thing we tell people is when they get these devices, particularly during the holiday, the very first thing you should do is look at the security settings and look at your settings. Those are very important things to do. And you could do it in the very beginning. It wouldn't take that long at all. Even television, Shirley. I can't tell you the number of times I've been a party pooper, again, pre-COVID, where I go to a friend's home who had a new TV and I say, hey, what's your privacy setting on your television? What's your privacy setting on your television? And of course, they look at me and, you know, the wide-eye emoji, like, what are you talking about? And then we go to settings, then we go, and they see all these things like, wait a minute, my TV has been collecting all this information and I can secure it? Yes, you can. It is a, you know, a TV is only a computer that has a bigger screen, right? And so we tell people to make sure that they manipulate those security settings and privacy settings as soon as they get those new devices.
Well, and the other thing too, is if they are getting devices, these personal assistants that you talk to them and give them orders and they do all kinds of things for you, I recommend to people that they keep them turned off. Except when they want to use them. And of course, that takes away the attractiveness of it. Do you have better advice for consumers who are getting personal assistance?
Well, call for action, audience may be a bit disappointed in me, but when I say that we have a few people on our board that produce those conversational platforms, so I'm not going to be too critical of them.
I'm not being critical. I think they can be very handy. But what I want to know is how do consumers protect themselves from having something strange happen, like that happened to a friend of mine who didn't know it, but she got a box of hand lotion showing up on her front door, and she was told that it had been ordered through her personal assistant.
Yeah, you know, you have situations like that, Shirley. And I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but even those personal assistants, but especially those personal assistants, those conversational platforms, again, they have security settings and they have privacy settings. And if you're if you don't have those things enabled, then yes, you can have situations like what happened to your friend, happen on a regular basis. I'll give you another example. A report came out for the FBI just yesterday about the Ring door Ring video systems that people were hacking into and calling the police and you know, calling in a maneuver that's called swatting, right?
A team in there and people get injured and there's no crime going on at all.
Exactly. That's exactly
the criminal right. Is the one that called in that order. Yeah, to the
that's
police.
Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. And not even necessarily for monetary gain, right, Shirley? It's
viciousness sometimes.
That's it. That's a perfect word. It's just a vicious move. And so there again, it's boring. It's maybe not the most exciting things, but security settings, privacy settings. The last example I'll give you, Shirley, is how, you know, these days, even before COVID, if you wanted to, you know, stop or slow down the spread of flu and cold, what you tell people to cough into their elbows and make sure that they're, you know, washing their hands. These are not terribly exciting suggestions, right? They're not sexy at all, but very, very effective.
That's the thing that we want is effective, Kelvin.
That's it. And in the same way, you know, passwords, patching, multi-factor authentication, making sure when you get a new device that you look at those things, very effective, Shirley.
And go online and see what the advice is, even from the manufacturer, about using it and setting up your privacy screens and what you need to do. So, you know, I mean, I think we get to the point where anymore where we just plug it in and use it. That's not a good idea.
That's
you need
right.
to know
that's
what right. it, what it's doing and how it's doing it. Kelvin, I know that you publish a newsletter. Can people subscribe to that newsletter through your website?
Absolutely, Shirley. They can go to staysafeonline.org. Not only the newsletter, we have a plethora of resources and tools there for them to use at no cost, by the way, Shirley. And so if a local community group in Topeka, Kansas, or Lansing, Michigan, want to talk to their members about cybersecurity, they can go to our website, download some of that material, and put their organization's name on it. You know, it's vetted material. It's great material from, you know, our board members and the government who we work with. And so, yeah, they can go to staysafeonline.org for the newsletter, as well as many, many other resources and tools.
Yeah, and I think you all you're doing a great job, and you're reaching some of the areas that, particularly for small businesses, as you know, I'm a champion of small businesses, and really appreciate what you're doing in that score. We've got about a minute here. Any last minute thought? I know, keep it simple, stupid.
I'm going to throw you a curveball here and say, you know, make sure you're developing partnerships too. I think that's very important, Shirley. As we look at technology, we're talking about products, we're talking about processes, and we're talking about people, the human factor. And I think this conversation today with the National Cybersecurity Alliance and call for action with Kelvin and with Shirley is just such a great message to say, we have to talk to each other, we have to partner, and we have to share these resources so that we all can be more secure together. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be on.
That's great. That's great advice, Kelvin. And it's lovely to have you on. And we'll have to do this again when we get to the point where we can actually meet in person. But this rate, it's okay. Yes.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Kelvin Coleman, who's the executive director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance. Their website is staysafeonline.org. They have some great information there. They also publish a monthly newsletter, so check it out, folks. And this is Shirley Rooker right here on Federal News Network, telling you to call me or contact me at shirley@callforaction.org. Thank you.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WJLA 7 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.